Hello, I'm Midwife Pip, and welcome to the Midwife Pip podcast, the home of honest expert chats. My mission is to provide you with the very best support and information through pregnancy, birth, and beyond with my online courses over at midwifepip.com. And as a podcast listener, I'm also offering you an exclusive 15% off all my online courses using code PODCAST15. With no further ado, let's get chatting. I think the most commonly searched words for new parents are, how can I get my baby to sleep? The sleep disturbances and deprivation of being a new parent are tough, as I know all too well since becoming my mum myself in 2021. If babies came with a sleep manual, that'd be great, but they just don't. So we have to figure out how to support these beautiful little joyous sleep thieves ourselves. I think preparing for the sleep changes and understanding how to support your little one in the outside world should be considered in pregnancy. So we have realistic expectations when the time comes and we know what to do. On this week's episode, I am joined by Lisa Lamb, known better on social media as the Night Ninja. Lisa is a mum of three and prides her sleep coaching approach as being non-judgmental and free from any bullshit. We are all for keeping it real on this podcast, so I'm excited to pick Lisa's expert brains on all things helping your baby to sleep. So welcome, Lisa, and thank you so much for giving up time in your super busy mum and work life to join me on the podcast today.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having me. And I'm super excited to be here.
So I have got Finley on me today, Lisa, and I have told him he has to listen and take on board everything you say. But I have to confess, as we said, we're keeping it real. I feel like I'm currently breaking every newborn sleep rule by breastfeeding him as we speak and hoping that I breastfeed him to sleep as we speak. So just for keeping it real, I am winging this as much as every new mum and very much in need of your expertise. So thank you for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
So Lisa, I just wonder, what drew you to becoming a sleep coach? Was that kind of pre-children, or did you kind of feel the effects of the new mum sleep deprivation and then decide to kind of educate yourself, I guess?
Yeah. So I've always worked with children. So I was a nursery nurse when I was younger, and then I became a primary school teacher. So I've always been in some sort of teaching. And then when I had my eldest daughter, yeah, I was just so intrigued about sleep. I had friends who already had babies before me, and I saw the struggles that they went through with sleep. Like things like, you know, they struggled to come out for dinner because they were the only ones that were able to put their babies down. So I didn't realize there was such a big thing about baby sleep, you know, being a nursery nurse, then going into teaching. I just thought, you know, baby sleep, and that's just how it is. So when I first had Scarlett, I just did, yeah, loads and loads and loads of reading. And I wouldn't say that I was like, I struggled with her sleep, because I was very much on it. I suppose being a primary school teacher, you're very routine-y anyway. So that's the approach that, for my parenting style, that's the approach that I went into, that it was very quite a, like a routine. And looking back now, my routine with Scarlett was very, very strict. You know, very different to how I did it with my second and my third, because I knew so much more. And I was, especially by my third, I was a full sleep coach by then. So, you know, it's a very different approach to Scarlett. So it was a bit more stricter. And really like kind of routine, really trying to get these like long naps in a cot. And then I just started helping friends and family. I didn't even know there were sleep coaches even there. I didn't know it was even a job. My brother lives in America and he suggested it to me, thinking America was a much bigger thing, you know, back 6 years ago. And so I dived into it. And then, yeah, I just did loads of different courses and then started my business in 2016 and been doing it ever since. And now I do it full time. So I gave up teaching pretty quickly after becoming a sleep coach. And then, yeah, been doing my business ever since.
My gosh. And as you can hear from Finley, I am very pleased there's people like you out there, because that sleep deprivation is brutal. And I thought going into motherhood that I'd be fine with that, because I was like, I do night shifts, you know, I'm used to kind of pulling an all-nighter, but it's just relentless, isn't it? And I think maybe we should start about talking perhaps about those first 6 weeks, where certainly in my experience, Lisa, I don't know about yours, but that seemed the most relentless. And what our expectations should actually look like. Because it's, I think sometimes we feel that, you know, we'll just, the baby will sleep all day, we'll put them down and we'll get on with life. But actually it's not like that, is it?
Yeah. So I think everyone has different experiences. And I think also, like, if you are part of a group and where some of you have had babies together, I think it's really important not to kind of look at somebody else's baby and see how they're doing compared to yours. So I think that's one thing to really kind of like focus on. Every baby is different. Every baby, you know, you can get a baby that comes out and then they're just quiet children, they just do want loads and loads of sleep, and then you get another baby that'll be a bit more alert. You know, some babies, you know the first 3 weeks just sleep all day, but actually you can get a baby that's already actually quite alert in the first couple of weeks and they're just not interested in sleeping or just struggle to get to sleep. So my first thing kind of things to kind of is just to kind of like take a deep breath and breathe and embrace yourself that yes, that you are going to be struggling with sleep. So I think you need to kind of get your mindset around that, and not believing that, you know, that yeah, you're going to get a baby that's going to sleep all the time. It's not going to not be like that for everybody. So kind of things you can kind of put into place. Newborn babies, they do have such a short awake windows. They can only stay awake for like 45 minutes to 60 minutes. So if you're thinking, especially if you're breastfeeding, that is literally going to be like a feed, nappy, and then sleep again. And you might find that if you are breastfeeding or even bottle feeding, that they end up falling asleep on the feed, which is really, really normal. It's so natural. It's this what, yeah, it's how they suck and then they fall asleep. So really important that that's like a natural thing for them to do. So things that you can kind of do to help your baby get to sleep is that they need lots of cuddles and lots of love when they first come out. So really making sure that you're giving them that love and that need and that cuddle, and that will help them to relax and go to sleep. You can use a carrier. So if you do have other children, you can put your baby in a carrier and walk around with your baby. And then if you do have like a sleep space, once your baby's asleep, you can try and lay them down. Some babies will be quite happy to be laid down and some babies actually still want you to hold them. So lots of like contact naps. So really just do kind of just keep your diary kind of clear and not book in too much, because otherwise you put an expectation on yourself and you're going to get stressed out that your baby isn't sleeping, when actually all you need to really concentrate really on the first 6 weeks is, you know, getting your feeding established, either if you're bottle feeding or breastfeeding, get that established first, and then, you know, making sure that your baby's getting the sleep that they need and getting it how you can get it. So things like also, when babies come out, they don't know what day and night, so helping them with that day and night. So during the daytime, having lots of light, getting out, having their sleep in the light, and then at nighttime is when it becomes dark. So getting them used to day and night, and that will really just help their circadian rhythm to kick in around 8 weeks.
Sorry, I just hit mute there, so you didn't hear Finley whinging around. He obviously doesn't agree, Lisa. but yeah, no, and that's really good advice. And when you talk about contact naps, is that sort of like, you know, post-feed or skin-to-skin napping?
Like all of it is so good. So yeah, if you can do skin-to-skin, like even if dad, if you are breastfeeding, you could do the feed and then you could then pass the baby over to dad. So dad can hold. So yeah, so just contact nap is just like in your arms, doing it safely, obviously not laying down on the sofa. So always following the Lullaby Trust safety sleep tips on there, but you know, just holding your baby safely, like contacting. That's how some babies do. Like with my first, she actually hated being held. Like it was like anyone that would come in would want to help hold her, and I would get stressed out. So I'm thinking, oh my god, as soon as you pick her up, she's going to cry, because she just liked laying on her back in her space, and that's just how she was. Whereas my third loved being held. So it doesn't mean that every baby wants to be held all the time. Every baby is different. So just kind of go in with what you feel works for you, and not feeling like you're making a rod for your own back and all that sort of nonsense. And then first 6 weeks, or the first 3 months, you kind of just got to get through it the best that works for you. That's my best advice. Is I think that with your first, you take other people's opinions. I know I did with mine, but by the second and third, you're literally like, look, back off, I know what I'm doing here, this is my child. Like, you just got to follow your instincts of what feels right for you.
You're so right. And oh my gosh, the most unhelpful thing that a new mum with like a under 6 week old wants to hear is that someone else's baby slept through the night. I remember thinking, if anyone else tells me their baby sleeps through the night, I think I'm going to go mad. Like, and it's that comparison thing, isn't it? And we're awful at it as women in like every aspect of life. And I think even more so in motherhood, and even more so with your first, because you're learning on the job, aren't you? Like, I've always felt like first babies are kind of like a guinea pig in that aspect.
Yeah, they are.
So you're
they
so
turn good. Out fine though. The eldest always turn out good. good. She's a good girl.
We'll roll with that. We'll roll with that. But yeah, it kind of feels like you're even more prone to kind of comparing to other people. So I think what you said in terms of every baby's unique, you know, you do you, they all figure out in the end is really, really helpful advice. And am I right in thinking, Lisa, that those first 6 weeks, we shouldn't really try and stipulate any kind of massive routine? It is just kind of going with your baby as they learn the difference between day and night. And I guess, well, I'm talking a lot of you here, but I guess I always thought to myself when little Finley was born, it was only a week or so ago that he was curled up inside my tummy in the dark, hearing my blood flow and placenta, and he's come out and I'm kind of expecting him to sleep independently in a strange cot with weird clothes on and a nappy, and yeah, he's learning to feed and breathe for himself and all this stuff. Like, it's a massive transition for them, isn't it?
Yeah, no, definitely. And that's it. I think our society expectations are just very different to actually what naturally we should be doing. So as I said, just kind of going with it. And when we say like routines, I think we need, so some people, I think when they like say like routines, or like, I think they think it's like a strict routine where you're like, right, 7 o'clock, get up, feed the baby, 8 o'clock, baby in the cot. Whereas even with my older children, it's not how I work. It's like looking for their awake windows, which I truly do believe in. Like, I've helped like hundreds and hundreds of families of trying to work out, like, even though it might say like a baby at like 1 month can only stay awake for 45 minutes, 6 minutes, your baby might be able to only do 45 minutes, and another baby at the same age might be able to do longer. So it is, you got to look at your baby's sleep cues, like, especially for newborns. Are they like turning away from you? Are they disengaging with you? Are they like, you know, rubbing their, you know, their eyes, their ears, and watching out for these tired signs as well. So looking out for tired signs, and when you kind of feel that your baby is starting to get ready, then you can start putting them down. And what you'll find, if you kind of just follow that, you'll naturally just fall into a routine. The baby will naturally, you know, like how they fall into a feed routine, they'll naturally fall into a sleep routine, and you're just helping that. If you didn't put things into place, and I don't know if you've experienced this, but I know some of my clients, you know, I get messages from mums with newborns where their babies have stayed awake for hours and hours and hours, and they feel like, I just can't get my baby to sleep. And that's because now they're so overtired. So we do need to put these things into place. Unfortunately, for some babies, at that 45 minute mark, they don't go, oh, do you know what, I need to go to sleep now, and just fall asleep. It just doesn't happen. So you do need to mindfully think about your baby's sleep. But it's not where, you know, I need to put them in the cot and I need to like let themselves settle and, you know, all this sort of stuff. It's more just naturally getting them into a routine, however you can get them to sleep. I know with new mums, like, that I get messages where they'll say, you know, I can't get my baby off me, they're on me all the time. And that is really, really draining, especially if you've got other children as well. You feel like you can't sit on the sofa for 2 hours holding your baby. So once you've got them to sleep, and, you know, they've been asleep for 10, 15 minutes, you can then try and lay them in to, like, you know, the most barkies or into their sleep environment, and using white noise. Like, white noise is really good, great for new babies. And things like swaddles are amazing. You might find at the start your baby doesn't like it, but, you know, well, I swear by them, especially with my three children, they just like loved it. And it's just such a great cue as they got older that they would literally, as I was wrapping them up, they would literally close their eyes and fall asleep. So you've got to help your baby's like circadian rhythm, their body clock, to get into that sleep. And if you don't, that's when you're going to get like a baby that, you know, is going to struggle and stay awake for hours and hours.
That's really helpful, Lisa. And I wish I knew that when Finley was brand new, because I had that classic that I'm sure, because it makes sense for adults, in that the more he slept in the day, the less he would sleep at night because he wouldn't be tired. But that's completely wrong, isn't it? With new babies, it's like the opposite.
Yeah. Yeah. You just, like, the most important thing I say to anybody, I know that one of the questions we're going to talk about is length of naps. But, you know, I always say to parents first, forget about the length of naps. Like, that is not important. Let's just get that routine going first. Just getting them to naturally want to fall asleep, you know, whatever that time scale is for them, then we can start trying to extend their naps. But as long as they're getting short naps regularly throughout that day, then they're not going to be overtired, and then you're going to get a baby that's a lot more settled. Because you think, for a newborn baby, if they have half an hour, when 45 minutes or an hour, they're going to have another little half an hour. They're having them short little naps throughout the day. They're going to be settled. They're going to feed well as well. So also, like, feeding and sleep, you know, they go par on par on them early stages.
Yeah, that's really helpful to understand as well. And then, so let's talk about feeding and sleep. So feeding, cuddling, using a dummy to get little ones to sleep. Are these okay to do? I mean, you hear such conflicting stuff, don't you? You know, don't feed your baby to sleep, or actually, yes, that's normal to feed your baby to sleep, or use a dummy, or don't use a dummy. What on earth are we meant to be doing, Lisa? We're just taking a quick pause from this episode so that I can share with you a brand that I know you're going to love as much as I do. My little Finley is growing up fast and is almost on the move, which means it's now time to start making our home safe for him. Did you know that every single week, at least one child under 5 years of age dies in an accident, 75% of which happen in their own home? I think this is terrifying. And this is why the team at Cheeky Rascals offer a variety of products that not only help make parents' lives easier, but are also the safest on the market, including brands like Love to Dream, Rocket, and the Fred Baby Proofing Safety Range, which has everything you need to keep your little ones safe and your mind at ease. I want to support you to make your home safer for your little one and prevent them coming to any harm. So Cheeky Rascals are sponsoring this podcast and offering you 15% off Fred safety products using the code MIDWIFEPIP15.
It's so confusing. I know, sometimes I'm confused. Okay, so look, when they're so young, they do need some sort of help to get to sleep. And the way that, you know, if feeding, using a dummy and holding and rocking your baby is working for you and it works, then it's never a problem. Most people that come to me, they're at a place where, you know, maybe their baby's waking up lots in the nighttime, or they want to change the way their baby wants to fall asleep because they want their, you know, they want the dad to be able to put the baby to sleep, or they want grandma to come over to put the baby to sleep. This is when they're a bit older. So, you know, when they're kind of at the newborn stage, 5-6 months, you know, mum has done like, you know, 6 months and she wants a little bit of a break. They now want to change it. So I always say to people, you know, if it's working for you, I never change anything if it's working for somebody. So the main things I would say first is I would check the baby's nap times first, have a look at the bedtime routine, have a look how the parents are responding in the middle of the nighttime, and look at that stuff first. And then I would then look at how the baby is falling to sleep to see if that is actually becoming an issue. And sometimes it is, and sometimes it's not. So it really isn't a case of, yes, it's wrong or right. It's if it's working for you, amazing. And then, or if you do feel, especially like a dummy run, if you feel like you're popping in every hour, popping in that dummy, and your baby goes back every time, then I would say that is like a dummy issue going on there, and we need to maybe think about helping your baby to learn to sleep in a different way. So it's about, yeah, it's just about actually finding out. It's not always the problem, but it can be.
No, that's really good. So actually, if it's working for you and you're happy with it, roll with it. Like, don't try and fix, what is it? If it's not broken, don't fix it.
Yeah. You
know, leave well alone, roll with it. Amazing. So we talked a little bit about wake windows. Would you mind kind of explaining, Lisa, to us a little bit what they are and why it is so important we keep an eye on those?
Yeah. So again, this is another conflicting conversation. Some people believe in them, some people don't. But I've used them since like for the last like six and a half, yeah, 6 years, nearly come up to 6 years now. And it's not something that is so strict. Like, you know, like if you're a 6-month-old baby, you must do 2 hours. It's like a range. Like, so I have found that, you know, at certain ages, babies can stay awake for a certain time. So, so it's just about watching that wake window. So once your baby wakes up at 7, what I would normally say if your baby's like 5 months old, I'd say their wake window is probably around 2 hours in the morning, maybe a little bit less. So just around that sort of hour, keep an eye on your baby. Have a look. Are they showing signs of tiredness? Are they starting to disengage? Are they starting to get a bit cranky? So it's just about watching the clock, but also watching their tire cues. And then, yeah, kind of finding their sweet spot and what you might find. So the wake windows are from when they wake up until their next sleep. And that just how you look at it throughout the day. And some babies will stay quite consistent with that time throughout the day, and other babies will be able to stay awake a bit longer as they go on. Like my little girl, when she was 10 months, she could only do 2 hours. She just loved her sleep so much. Whereas most 10 month olds will maybe on like three and a half hour wait time. So again, it doesn't, it's very different for everybody, and it's finding out what works for you. But I, for me, I love this kind of guide. I like numbers. I like that. Like, I'm a sort of person that likes, you need to kind of give me at least like something to kind of follow. So then I kind of understand it. So that's how I do my approach. Like I work with numbers just to give parents like a bit of an idea of what to kind of follow. I think it helps.
I think it helps, because otherwise you, and also as a parent, like time just flies, doesn't it? Like you're like, oh my gosh, how has it already been, you know, X number of hours? So if you've got a bit of an idea on that clock, and then you can start looking out for those sleepy cues.
Yeah.
And I guess the whole idea of looking out for those wait windows, Lisa, is it so that you don't end up with a baby that's overtired and then sleep becomes a little more challenging?
Yeah, just overtired or even undertired. So we all know that if our babies get overtired, it's a bit of a nightmare to get them to go down to sleep. Same for adults. If we're overtired, we struggle to get to sleep. We toss, we turn, we find it really difficult to relax. And also if we're not tired enough, we again struggle to sleep. So it's exactly the same for a baby. You know, there's trying to get a baby to sleep if they're not tired is not going to work. And if they're overtired, again, you're going to have a struggle.
Absolutely. And let's look sleep cues. So we kind of spoke a little bit about them. So is that the kind of rubbing of eyes, like you said, kind of disengaging, turning away? Is there anything else we should look out for that might indicate a tired baby?
Yeah. So as we said before, so turning away, disengaging, rubbing eyes, rubbing ears, getting a little bit cranky. Yeah, they're all the kind of like the main kind of signs. And I think sometimes like with newborns, we can, especially if you're breastfeeding, sometimes get the signs wrong. So once they start crying, you think that they're hungry rather than actually they need a sleep. And sometimes we can end up, you know, feeding rather than them wanting to go to sleep. So just again, keeping an eye on that making jerking with their arms and their legs, losing interest. So as they get older, losing interest in their toys, staring into space is also a good one. I remember with like my newborn, my partner was like talking to like our newborn baby, and he's like, oh, she just keeps looking away. And I was like, yeah, it's because she's tired. So she's like, get out of my face, I want to go to sleep now. And some babies don't, like I've had clients where they're just like, oh my god, like they just don't show any signs. And that's really, really difficult. And that's why then your wait windows can be really helpful if your baby isn't showing any signs.
Yeah, that is super helpful. I think Finley was on cue there when you started to speak about the noises they make. So a great live demonstration. Thanks, Finley. So let's look at sort of an average, I don't know, 2-month-old baby. What sort of a wake window would you expect from them? And typically, I'm going to ask that magic question. How long should their naps typically be?
Okay, so newborn, so between 0 to 3 months, it's around 45 to 60 minutes. So that's quite consistent. And then from about 3 months to like 3 months, to say 4 months, they can do maybe 60 to 90 minutes. And then 4 months to 5 months, like an hour and a half to two, and then 6 months, 2 hours, 2.5 hours, maybe at a push at three. So yeah, and then like it kind of like just goes up slowly, slowly, slowly. I've actually got, I'll share it with you. I actually did a post the other day with kind of like a rough guide on my grid. So I'll post that and you can like maybe repost it on your Instagram for everybody.
Oh yeah, brilliant. Okay, so length, description, that'd be handy.
So length of time, anything from like half an hour, 45 minutes is a good nap. So that's what you're kind of like aiming for, up to like an hour and a half to 2 hours. But what I do say is that if your baby, so at 2 months, if your baby does wake up at like half an hour, 45 minutes, even when they're older, you can always try to see if you can get your baby to go back to sleep. So I always say, you know, if they are having a short nap, let's try to extend it. So depending where your baby's sleeping, you know, if they're sleeping in their car or if they're sleeping in the Moses basket, that you would just go to your baby and try and get them to go back to sleep. So that could be trying to feed them back to sleep, holding back to sleep, some shushing and patting back to sleep. However your baby, whatever method you can use to try and get your baby to sleep. And I always say, try for like 5 to 15 minutes to see if you can get your little one back to sleep. If they're upset, then I just say, just stop. you know, if they're upset and they're done, just get them up. They're not going to go back to sleep. So yeah, anything from like half an hour up to a 2 hour is a decent nap. Amazing. I think it's important to see how your baby's temperament is. So like if they're happy, so I have got a baby at the moment who's 7 months having really short naps, but he's actually happy. So, you know, even though he's not getting the amount of day sleep he's getting, his nighttime sleep is good. So on the 24 hour clock, his actual sleep is pretty good. But obviously it's just the short naps is, you know, the mum's just not getting enough, like any break, which is, you know, it's hard on her. But you've just got to be, as long as your baby is happy, then that's a sign that they're getting the sleep that they need. And I think, I wish I kind of knew this with my first, because I was so adamant, you know, the things that I wrote was that they had to have like these 2 hour naps consistent. So I was very much working to get these 2 hour naps. And eventually it did pay off, but it was a lot of work from my side. Whereas with my youngest, you know, if she had half an hour nap, I was like, oh, it's okay, get her up and we'll just have another nap, you know, in a couple of hours. And it was just so much more relaxed and more easier on myself. So that's my biggest thing about naps. Like every nap is good. And, you know, if they've had half an hour nap, get out, go in the pram, go in the car, go in the carrier to see if you can extend in. If not, they'll have another nap later.
I love that approach, Lisa, because it just feels quite gentle and individualized. And I think it's really important that we don't view babies as robots. You know, we're all individual. My sleep one night is completely different to the next night. So how we can't expect these little tiny babies to kind of be exactly the same robotic sleep patterns kind of every single day. And can I pick your brains on something you just mentioned about nighttime and nap sleeps, but the environment that babies are in? What should that look like? How can we kind of help them in that way?
So for newborns, so lots of daytime sleeping, but as they get older, you know, like 5-6 months, it all just depends, like if you want your child to sleep in a cot or if you're happy for your child to sleep in a pram. Either way, you know, at 5-6 months, I do recommend a dark room, because as they get older, they get more aware of their sleep environment. So imagine you trying to go for a nap and there's daylight outside. Okay, as adults, we'd probably force ourselves to go to sleep because we know that we need to have that nap. Whereas with a baby, especially if they've gone down and they're coming through that first sleep cycle around 45 minutes and there's light coming in, it can just affect that nap. So it's just, for me, like protecting their sleep environment to get the best sleep, I feel, is really important. So you can, if they're in a cot, you can like make it nice and dark, use white noise. And if they're in the pram or in a carrier, then you can just use, like, you can get like things to go over your pram to make it nice and dark. And even if you're doing a contact nap at home, I'd close the curtains and just make sure that it's just nice and dark and cozy for them.
And those things actually in sleep environment has been really, really helpful just for me on my journey. That I think it makes sense, doesn't it, when you think about it, but especially when you're used to having a newborn that all like in the first few weeks just sleep regardless, it's hard to kind of recognize sometimes that you need to transition. But I'm definitely noticing that Finley's much more aware of what's going on. If there's stimulation, he's like, no, I'm missing out, I'm not sleeping, thanks. I'll play. That definitely becomes, I think, much, much more important. Another question for you: controlled crying. Mm-hmm. Possibly a difficult one. What's your take on it? What is it? What's your take on it?
So controlled crying, from my perspective, is when you put your baby into their sleep environment, you leave the room, and then you do time intervals. So like maybe 1-2 minutes, and you keep putting the time up. And then you keep going in and out of the room. So that's my kind of take on controlled crying. I'm not judgmental with any kind of like sleep training. The only one that I like, you know, try to advise parents not to do is, you know, put the baby into the cot. So the kind of like cry out method, into the cot, leave them, and you don't kind of go back and respond. Yeah. The way that I do it, and when I speak to parents, I don't feel like they are educated enough to know that actually this is, you know, you can actually stay in the room with your baby, responding to your baby. So you don't have to ever leave the room. So it's kind of like, you know, some people would say that that's the same as controlled crying. But for me, when you're with your baby, responding to your baby, you know, picking your baby up whenever you feel that you need to, giving them a cuddle, for me, that I think is a little bit different to controlled crying, because you're there responding. But sometimes saying that, you know, sometimes even when you're in the room responding to your baby, they can still be very upset. And I've had times where we've been in the room for like 2 weeks and the baby is still getting upset. And sometimes we have to just take a step back and just come out of the room and give that baby some space. And actually, like, I've had like a client do it recently, and within like 10 minutes, the mum did go back in, but within 10 minutes, the baby was sleeping. And now the baby's going down with no crying. But whereas the 2 weeks when we was in the room at the time, there was more crying going on. So I think it's really to kind of just say there's only one way to kind of, like, you know, if you want to change the way your baby falls asleep, to say there's only one way to do it. I think it's not right. I think every baby is different. And I think you need, when you're working with families or when families are looking to change something, to really dive in to all their different methods that feels right for them as a family. And I think that's the most important thing. You know, I help, you know, parents that want to do it really, really gently. And I help parents that actually like, do you know what, I want to do it a bit more, you know, a bit more stricter. So yeah, it's having that balance and what your families want to do, and just being honest with them and giving them the right information so then they can then choose.
That is really, really helpful, Lisa, because I think when we think of controlled crying, we visualize like this baby screaming, you know, in like a complete state, and the parents just like sat outside, they're just ignoring them and waiting it out.
Yeah.
So it's good to know that actually that's not necessarily what it is, and that actually perhaps there might be a gentler approach to it that might work for you. I've not sort of explored that with Finley, because I mean, touch wood, we're recording this podcast with him with us, so I might be like properly dating this. He's generally not an overly crying baby, so when he does cry, it's usually because he's hungry or there's a problem. But the other evening I was downstairs and I had him on the baby monitor. He'd gone down to sleep absolutely fine, and he woke up like properly crying, and he is teething at the moment. But anyway, I ran upstairs and said, oh my gosh, I really need a wee. If I'm going to have to feed him for half an hour, I need a wee first, else we're going to be in all sorts of problems. So he quickly went for a wee, washed my hands, came out and was like, oh, he stopped crying. So I was like, oh, I feel like I've left him to cry himself back to sleep, and then all that mum guilt came. But actually, yeah, what you've just said makes me feel a lot better about that. So thank you.
Yeah, I think the whole crying thing, I think, could go so deep into this, but I'm going to be. But the thing about crying is that crying is not a negative thing. And I think in our society, as soon as a baby cries, oh my God, what's wrong with your baby? And straight away you're like, oh my God, like my baby's crying, I'm not doing something right. And I think that's something that we have to change as a society, because babies are allowed to cry. And also as mums, we don't always know why they're crying. Like, we fed them, you know, they've had everything we can possibly do, you know, like they're just upset for whatever reasons. And I think, like, when you hear your baby cry, you can let your baby cry for a couple of minutes and see what happened. You don't have to respond straight away. Because as you just said there, you went to the toilet, and actually when you came out, your baby then like went back to sleep or settled or was happy. So then, you know, actually they were just having a bit of a moment. You know, so I think it's important to kind of understand your baby's kind of cry. So I kind of have like a ladder, just so my parents can know, actually, if they're shouting and just like chatting away, actually just leave them. That's fine. Babies make noises in the middle of the night time. Sometimes they might like cry and stop crying. And so until they're really crying for you, like really crying, then you can go in and respond and whatever need that they want. If you need to feed them back to sleep, hold them, to pat them, put their dummy back in. But I think sometimes like just actually just waiting and seeing, it actually makes you as a parent learn what your baby needs rather than rushing in too quickly and actually I don't even know what my baby needs right now. So yeah, just being a bit more aware of your baby's crying and feeling that you don't have to jump all of the time. I think that's one of the things with my clients. Like I always tell them to go in when they feel that they need to go in, because everyone's levels of crying is very different. Mm-hmm. So I think by telling someone to go in when you feel, right, actually that's a cry that I need to go in, it just helps them to be a bit more in tuned. And I get a lot of good feedback that actually just changing that mindset for them, because it's sometimes a big game changer for them.
Yeah, and like you say, it's getting to know your baby. You know when your baby's crying because maybe they're just drifting off, and then they're sort of crying a bit and babbling a bit and they're absolutely fine, their eyes are still closed. Or when they're crying like out of some sort of distress, and you only get to know that by responding to your own baby, don't you? So I love that, Lisa. I love how sort of gentle and unique you are, and how it's not kind of, you know, one size fits all. Every baby is completely different.
I'm trying. I've done a lot of courses and like, I'm learning all the time.
Yeah. And I think that's so important, isn't it? Because there's more research coming out. And I just wonder from your, I mean, I don't think as far as I'm aware, there's any evidence for it, but just from your experience working with families, do you find that babies sleep any better or I don't want to say worse because that's really negative, isn't it? But do you think babies sleep differently depending on the mode of feeding? So sort of formula fed babies or bottle fed babies or breastfed babies?
No, so maybe like as newborns, like just because obviously breastfed babies, they feed a little bit more often. But no, I get breastfeeding and bottle feeding mums with very similar stories. So especially as they become older and at the newborn, like the way that they fed has nothing to do with their sleeping. You know, it is biological. It's getting them daytime naps, setting up that nice bedtime routine. You know, if your baby is waking up lots of times in the nighttime, you know, trying to work out, is it a medical thing? Is there something else going on? Is there something else underlined? And once you've kind of, you know, actually, no, everything's fine, then you can maybe get to a bit more deeper of what's kind of going on.
Yeah, that's really good to know. And I think There's so much, and I get messages from mums all the time on Instagram saying, you know, they feel they're doing something wrong because their baby's not sleeping like Google or Wikipedia or Mumsnet tells us to. And that's a whole nother rant, isn't it? I'm sure.
Yeah.
But actually, I think the way that you've sort of spoken around sleep today, Lisa, has hopefully helped those mums realise that actually it's nothing they're doing wrong. This is just normal, absolutely normal parenting, absolutely normal newborn behaviour. It's not that they're not doing something or not responding to their baby's needs. It is just the way it is.
Yeah, like it's really tough. I would say that, you know, with all my three children, you know, I put a lot of work into their sleep. It wasn't, you know, all my three children are really good sleepers. They have been from kind of day dot, because I put things into place, but it was hard work for me. It wasn't something that was easy. I think with my first, you know, I was going back to work after 9 months, back to full-time teaching. My mum was having my baby. So I wanted to be at a point with where my mum could just put my baby down into the cot, she napped, and it just was easy for her. So for me, I had that 9 months to get that kind of sorted. And then with my third, it was a little bit different because then I was working from home. And but also I had two other kids that were going to nursery, and it was like a bit more of a juggle. So yeah, it is really, really difficult. I was lucky that I had support with my mum. You know, with my third, I'd leave her at home a lot just sleeping because I had that opportunity. For me, it was like, well, what's the point bringing her out? She sleeps better in her cot. Mm. So I'm just going to leave her at home. And I had that support, but not everyone does have that. So you have to put into a schedule that works for you as well. So I always say, so another really good tip, I say, you know, if your baby is napping in the cot, choose a nap that's the best. So if the morning nap is normally their best nap, then I always say try and stay at home for that and then go out and have that afternoon nap in the pram or in the car. Or if you find actually my baby sleeps better in the afternoon, then do go out in the morning time and then have that afternoon nap. So have that kind of balance so you can get out and about, because being at home with my first, I didn't mind it because I knew I was going back to work. But by my third, being at home every day, you know, it was draining. So I would always then make sure that I would jeopardize a nap and I'll just get out and about. So yeah, have that balance.
That is a really good point, Lisa. You know,
car naps, pram naps, contact naps, they're all decent naps.
Yeah.
But, you know, if your baby does prefer to sleep in a cot, then, yeah, just work out when that one can be in the cot.
That is such a good point there, Lisa, actually. I'm really pleased you said that, because I remember looking at, like I'm sure every new mum does, looking at like baby sleep routines and being like, great, so Finley does sleep in his cot. When do I like do life? I'm literally now a prisoner to my house because he has to sleep in his, you know, in his cot like every few hours. Like, how do you do life? So actually, that's a really good tip, that actually it's fine, use the car seat, use the pram, get out, because that's so important for maternal mental health in that postnatal period as well. And certainly pram walks and carrier walks were life-saving for me, like absolutely loved it, and it was a great nap opportunity for Finley too.
I think it's all just different. Like, you know, I was a mum that was quite happy to be at home. You know, a lot of my mums, they want to get out. So I think it's like looking at what works for you as a family and then putting things into place for you. Like, I get families where they want the babies napped in the cot, so we work to get babies napped in a cot. But have another family where they want a mixture, or I have a family that want to get the baby to self-settle in the cot, but they actually don't mind co-sleeping in the middle of the night time. So we work on that. And then in the middle of the night time, the baby ends up co-sleeping. So it can just be, you've got, yeah, it's what your family and what works for you and what you want, and just get your blinkers on, don't care about what anyone else is doing and what works for you.
Such an important message. I feel like we need to just shout that from the rooftops. You know, don't compare, you do you. Every baby's different. There is no textbook, you know, they aren't robots. Really, really valuable, I think. So let's fast forward. So we've talked lots about tiny babies. When we think about transitioning babies from your room to their room. So I know the Lullaby Trust explained that the first 6 months, we always recommend sleeping in the same room as your baby for both day and nighttime sleeps. But when the time is right, and I'm guessing you're probably going to say there is no definite time because we are.
which I love,
because sometimes that feels like a pressurized time scale. How can we, or any tips, I suppose, for a nice smooth transition, or as smooth as possible, if there's such thing, to getting your baby to sleep in their own room?
So, I think people are just so scared of this, aren't they, of the transition. But most babies, in my experience, actually do really well, especially if they're already sleeping in their own space in your room. Then that's a bit more of an easier transition to a different transition from co-sleeping to a cot. That's a kind of a bit of a different kind of movement. I just think go for it whenever you feel right. Some parents at 6 months want their babies in the cot, and then they feel guilty because they're like, oh my god, well, my friend still got their baby in the cot. And I think we always feel guilty no matter what. So as you said, just move your baby when you feel that it's ready, and don't ever feel pressured. Like, even to get your baby to sleep well, you know, you can still have your baby in your room. You don't need to ever. So I leave it up to my parents whenever, you know, if they've got the baby in the room, it's up to them. Like, we can do the work together no matter where the baby sleeps. I think the best transition is actually just maybe making up a bed in that room for the first week. Some babies just adapt to it really quickly and you can just put in. So if your baby's already going into the cot in your room, the transition will probably be quite easy for them. It's more for you. The transition is like, you've got to do a bit of work on yourself. You're probably going to be watching the monitor literally all night and not get any sleep. So what you could do is maybe set up a bed in there, so then you can just be there. So if the baby is waking up, you can respond to them quickly. And even like with co-sleeping, you can maybe camp out and do like a camping out method with them to kind of like transition and into the cot. But they're babies that settle well into their cots already, or even if you're feeding them, putting into their cot, they transition pretty well. I don't really have many issues with that.
Oh, I'm going to take you on that. That is going to be my little bit of reassurance when we navigate that in a few months' time.
Just do it when you're ready, though. Don't rush it. Obviously, we all disturb each other's people. Like, we all disturb. Like, my partner disturbs my sleep all the time. I wish I had a spare room to kick him in there. But, you know, we don't have the big enough space. But, you know, babies are noisy. And some babies are much noisier than others. And sometimes when I have a call, actually, with people, and I dive a bit deeper, and I'm like, actually, this baby's sleep, there's nothing wrong with this baby's sleep. It's just that the baby's making noises and disturbing the parent's sleep. Mm-hmm. So I think that's always quite interesting as well, that actually... sometimes we think we're having a sleep issue with our babies, but actually, I always say, well, if they were in their own room, would your baby be waking you up? And they're like, no. I'm like, yeah, it's just your baby's making noise. There's no actually sleep issues here.
And then it's probably a good time to get them in their own room. So then you
I never pressure that though.
I love it. Amazing. Now, I wonder whether you could, everyone that comes on, Lisa, I always ask for three top tips. And I was thinking, what would be a good three to ask you? Because there are so many top tips I know everyone wants from infant sleep. And I will link Lisa's website and her Instagram page in the description, so you can find lots of tips on there, because the stuff you put out is just awesome and so, so easy to grasp and helpful. But I thought perhaps we could touch on bedtime routine with your three top tips.
Yeah.
If you can narrow it down to three, I know that probably feels
fun. Yeah, no, bedtime routine, just keep it nice and simple. What do you mean, what to put into a bedtime routine, or?
Yeah, perhaps on creating a bedtime routine.
Yeah. Okay, perfect. Just keep it simple. I always recommend a bath. If not bathing, then a top and tail, kind of wash hands, wash face, wash feet. Because it's just such a good cue that the end of the day is coming. It's something so different from the sensations of anything they've experienced throughout that day. And it just helps with the warm bath. And obviously, as your baby gets older, I always get asked this question, oh my God, as my baby gets older, they're like splashing, it's not more relaxing, but that's fine. Get that last burst of energy out of them. And then pajamas, feed, story, bed. Keep it simple.
Nice. I like that. And I guess in terms of consistency, same time every night?
Same time every night if you can, but adjusting it to naps, especially like with the younger babies. Like if naps have been a bit rubbish that day, then bring bedtime earlier. Or if they've actually slept a little bit later that day, then move bedtime later. So again, watching the awake windows and adjusting bedtime to that. So you might maybe move in bedtime like half an hour earlier or later. I think that's a really good key, because I think with my first, I was very much like, oh my gosh, she has to be in bed at 7. Like I was on a time schedule for her. But what I struggled with was when she woke up early from the nap, I'd be like, well, she can't nap now all the way till like 2 o'clock, or she can't have her feed now until this time. Mm. Not realizing that actually I could have just moved everything. And this is the thing that's wrong with the books out there that are very like, you know, it's okay. Maybe if you've had a baby before, you might be like, oh, actually, no, this doesn't work. But with your first, you literally have that book as your Bible. So I had like lots of upset from her because she was tired or she was hungry. So yeah, remember, everything can be movable. Yeah, I think she's got 5% left on my computer. I need to run and get my charger.
Oh, that's all right. I won't keep you too much longer. Sorry, I could literally talk to you all day, Lisa, and pick all your brains. But thank you. It has been so, so helpful to talk to you. And I know that this will help so many mums. And I really hope that actually the take home, more than all of your incredible practical tips, is ditching that mum guilt and getting rid of that awful comparison that is just a nightmare. Yeah. But best of all, Lisa, about our chat is that Finley's now asleep.
I kind of had that magic sometimes when I do my consultations, and then they're like, oh my God, they're asleep.
We do definitely all need you in our homes. But yeah, thank you so much for your time, Lisa. That is going to be so helpful for so, so many new and expectant parents. And I will, as I say, all Lisa's details are linked in the episode description, so you can find lots more Night Ninja wisdom over there too.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I've absolutely loved it.
And that's it for another episode. I hope you enjoyed listening. Remember, you can use your exclusive discount code podcast15 on all my online courses. And why not check out my free mini course while you're there too? If you enjoyed listening to this episode, remember to hit subscribe so you're the first to hear about all the upcoming chats too. And I'd be immensely grateful if you could take a couple of minutes to leave me a quick podcast review too. I look forward to speaking to you again very soon.